Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Hello and welcome to What Goes Up, a weekly markets podcast. My name is Mike Regan. I'm a senior editor at Bloomberg.
And I'm Valdana Hayrick, a cross-asset reporter at Bloomberg.
And this week on the show, well, talk about a big milestone for cryptocurrencies this week when some of the leading players in the industry went to Congress to answer some good questions and, let's be honest, some not so good questions. But it's all about how digital assets should be regulated by the government. We're going to talk to one of the executives who testified, as well as his colleague, about some of the big issues that came up, as well as about what a wild year it was in crypto. But first, Valdana, I have to tell you, you know, I was watching this hearing yesterday, and as you know, you give me a hard time for asking very long, convoluted questions. And after watching this hearing, I had an epiphany. You know, I think I should run for Congress. I think I would fit in.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you might. I had the same thought when I was watching the hearings. And if you do, all I want to ask you is that I be your campaign manager, because I don't think that your jokes might not be good enough for you to actually run for Congress.
Really?
Yeah.
Is
that I'm really
a fact,
sorry
Valdana?
To break that to you. Yeah.
Oh, well, I think the problem is you have questionable taste in jokes, actually, but you have excellent taste in podcast guests, and I'm super excited about the two that you talked in and joining us this week. What great timing, Valdana. Timing is everything in markets and podcasts, and you got us two great guests for this week. So tell the listeners who they are and bring them into the show here.
Yeah, I'm as excited as you are about the two guests we have. We have the chief executive officer of FTX, that's Sam Bankman-Fried, and we have FTX US president Brett Harrison. They're both joining us, and I want to welcome you both to the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, Sam, I've got a lot of questions about, you know, sort of FTX's goals and the cryptocurrency world in general. First, though, I think a question that's on a lot of listeners' minds outside of that space is, I know you're in touch with Tom Brady from time to time, and I want to ask on behalf of all NFL fans other than the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, is this guy ever going to retire?
I hope not. We'll see. But I'm expecting 70. That's my kind of betting line.
Age 70. Oh my gosh. All right. That's not good news to the rest of the NFL. I think he'll still be winning games at age 70. Maybe you can talk to Giselle. I don't know.
Yeah, she's they're both doing pretty well, I think.
And it's bad news for me because my team, the Buffalo Bills, are playing Brady this weekend. So
that's bad. That is bad.
Might not be a good weekend for me.
Well, they've got a history of that.
But Sam, if we can maybe just start with you. Mike mentioned the hearings that we had this week. I want to actually ask you about what the hearings were like, because it seemed like the quality of the questions was a little bit better than what we've seen in the past, or maybe what even a lot of people were expecting.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, I think the questions were better and more informed than I was expecting. I also think that they were more balanced. I think that I was expecting, I think, more grandstanding. And I think I was just pleasantly surprised in general. I think like Congress done a really good job of starting to get, you know, up to speed on digital assets. And I think that they showed a lot of eagerness to continue learning.
You know, Sam and Brett, you chime in too if you have any thoughts, obviously. But when I think about sort of the where we are in the evolution of the cryptocurrency market. You know, I'm an older gentleman, as listeners know. I've been covered markets for a long time. And I think back to like 10 or 15 years when the stock market was sort of still in the adolescence phase when it comes to, you know, electronic trading, algorithmic trading, and computerized markets. And boy, there were all sorts of hiccups and flash crashes and, you know, the famous night trading debacle where a bad algorithm almost, you know, wiped out the firm in a few minutes. And it seems to me like there's a lot of parallels now where crypto is in sort of that adolescent stage where there's still stuff going wrong. And I want to give as an example a few months ago. It wasn't on FTX, another exchange where the price of Bitcoin, I believe is due to some error in an algorithm. Someone sold Bitcoin for like 87% below the market price. I wondered how you guys look at the market now in the sort of respect to this idea of regulation and what needs to be done to make it more mature. Is that type of thing I described, is that a problem that you think needs to be solved, or is it more the type of thing that's like, well, thanks for playing, guy, you know, better luck next time?
Yeah, I mean, I think Brett's gonna have some thoughts on this, but, you know, I think briefly this is sort of one of many examples of times where, yeah, I think these are absolutely problems that need to be solved, but I think that they're pretty straightforward solutions to a lot of them. And like, you know, price bands are just sort of like, you know, it's not like we put them on FTX, it's not that complex. And I think that in a lot of cases, it's like, yeah, there's definitely ways the market needs to grow, but it shouldn't be that hard to get there.
Yeah, I think the fact that cryptocurrency exchanges came about much later in the technological development of the internet and software and just how easy it is to deploy software on cloud, for example, means that the barrier to entry to making an exchange was super low, which has its good parts and its bad parts. Like if you want to, you know, write in your garage some code and try to deploy a new NASDAQ tomorrow, you can't. There's way too many barriers to entry to doing that. But there are literally thousands of exchanges where you can buy Bitcoin. I certainly can't name them all. And there's only a couple that really matter in terms of volume. But there are thousands of exchanges, which means not all of those players, absent of a clear regulatory framework in the US, are going to create the right rules to make sure that their exchange doesn't screw up a lot and print something way down or just break or, you know, be halted for a long time. And so it's up to exchanges like FTX to just sort of put in the right rules. And, you know, Sam, myself, we were at Jane Street and other trading firms for a long time. We're used to how other exchanges work. And it's like, okay, well, here's a common sense thing. Let's just put some price bands in place. Not a very difficult thing. But if you haven't been, you know, growing up in that environment, you don't think to do this sort of stuff.
So Sam, you said, just to follow up on that and just to expand it a little bit more, you said there are ways for the market to grow. And I know my team has been thinking about this a lot because what I hear from time to time is that 2021 was the year that crypto sort of grew up is typically the phrase that I hear. So in what ways does the market still have to evolve? And in what ways can it grow? As you say, there are ways for it to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think like one obvious place is frankly on the regulatory side, where, you know, I think that there's a lot of messy parts of the regulatory ecosystem today. I think that again, some fairly straightforward things could help that a ton. I think just like regulation enforcing that stablecoins are fully reserved is like something that would address, I think, a lot of the current concerns around them. And I think that, you know, having a clear markets framework for digital assets would be really important. Right now, there's a framework for commodity futures. There's a framework for security spot. It's not clear what the framework is for commodity spot markets. They're not all the same framework. It's not clear what the registration framework is for a digital asset security token. And I think that these are all things which I think have to be addressed. But again, I'm optimistic it's not that hard to address them within the current system and to kind of get to a much more robust and mature place from a regulatory perspective.
You know, I know Coinbase has proposed an SRO, self-regulatory organization, similar to what's in place in the stock market and other markets, where it's really the industry is policing itself and not as reliant on sort of an outside regulator to sort of cover the day-by-day issues that come up. Is that something you guys would get on board with too?
So in general, we're on board with that. And Actually, one of the exchange that we own, FTX US Derivatives, you know, it is an SRO, it's a DSRO. But when they think about how it is in the equity markets with FINRA, for example, FINRA, as we know it today, was the evolution of decades of equity markets. In order to get to the point where we have the ideal SRO for crypto, this is not something that's going to happen in 3 months or 6 months or a year. And we are in the situation right now where there is unclear regulation, with many exchanges choosing to impose different policies upon themselves and thus adding confusion and regulatory risk. And there's a lot of common sense things that we could do with the existing regulatory frameworks without having to wait for building the perfect SRO for crypto.
Yeah, and I basically agree with that. I think, you know, also saying that there should be SROs in crypto doesn't mean there shouldn't be federal regulatory oversight as well. Like, I think that, you know, in addition to SROs, you know, the SEC and the CFTC and other regulators have important roles to play in the crypto regulatory ecosystem.
I guess, you know, the issue that comes up a lot is that, you know, sort of the light hand of regulators is kind of what's attractive to a lot of people in the crypto world and the DeFi world. Does the U.S. focusing on this and sort of being trying to be the standard bearer for regulation, does that, do you think that makes the U.S. a more attractive or less attractive sort of the capital of the world for cryptocurrencies? Or is there a risk that, you know, everything goes to some country where, you know, they're a little more hands off?
I would change the tenses there a little bit. It has been something that I think has led to that. And you look today, you know, the United States is something like 5 to 10% of global crypto volume, which is tiny compared to its kind of broader fraction of, you know, most markets. But I'm optimistic that it could become, that it could go from a negative to a positive, again, without that much work, by, you know, getting in a more stable position than anywhere else in the world. But yeah, Brett, interested in your thoughts on this too.
Yeah, my take is that it's not regulation alone that drives the business away from the US. It's lack of clarity and therefore regulatory uncertainty. Being worried that if you make the wrong decision, you might be hit with an enforcement action 2 years from now makes it a pretty unattractive place to try to be an entrepreneur. The derivatives markets in the US, for example, under the CFTC, are some of the strictest in the world. But we also have most of the world's liquidity in derivatives. Think about the S&P 500 future or the Treasury bond futures or gold futures are some of the most liquid instruments in the world under one of the strictest derivatives regimes in the world. But it's a clear regulatory framework, and that makes it possible for people to innovate, to be able to create exchanges, to be able to either become FCMs or DCMs, you know, exchanges or clearing members, and be able to provide liquidity that way. It's this lack of clarity, this gray area that everyone's operating in, that I think is driving the talent and the new operations offshore.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Sam, I wanted to get back to that idea of stable coins. You mentioned, you know, you're a proponent that stable coins should be backed one-to-one per dollar. And for listeners who aren't too familiar with this space, a stable coin is basically a cryptocurrency that is designed to track the dollar one-to-one or some other currency one-to-one. But Sam, I wonder how do algorithmic backed stable coins fit in, or should they be in a completely other bucket than sort of the tethers of the world that are actually backed by US dollars?
Yeah, I think they should be. And you know, DAI, I'm guessing, is, you know, an example of one that you're thinking about there. And I think the basic answer is, again, I think clarity and transparency are the key things here. You know, maybe there's a different word, like maybe you have sort of like fiat fully reserved stable coins, and you have like algorithmic stable coins or whatever words you want to use, but it should be clearly disclosed to users that this isn't a stable coin in the sense of being backed one-to-one by a stable asset, right? It's an algorithmic thing which attempts to maintain a price peg but could fail. And I think it's an interesting product. And I think it's a different product than, you know, something like USDC is.
While we're talking about regulation, I wanted to bring up Tether because that tends to come up during conversations of crypto and regulation. And a lot of regulators say that Tether has gotten so large that if something were to go awry, it actually could pose challenges to other areas of the market. So if we do see something go awry, what areas might you look to sort of to see that happening in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll say like, this is, I think, one of the reasons why it would be really valuable to move to a system where, you know, there is a clear regulatory framework for transparency around the reserves of stable coins. I think that would go a long way here towards providing, you know, consumer protection, systemic risk. I don't think that it's currently at a place where it is threatening. I think what people are most worried about, mostly because I do think it is probably backed right now by sufficient assets, but that doesn't necessarily mean it always will be. And that doesn't necessarily mean that there's enough transparency around that. It would be, I think, healthy to move to a framework where there is sort of more enforced transparency around that. If a stablecoin wants to take part in, you know, in U.S. crypto markets.
Yeah, one thing I wanted to, and I do want to sort of talk about FTX specifically and what's next for you guys. But one more sort of regulatory based question, and I'm fascinated with the notion of anonymity in the crypto space. I mean, obviously the whole industry was born in anonymity with Satoshi. No one's still quite sure who he is. Maybe Sam, if you know, you can break some news here, but I'm guessing not. But to me, the more scrutiny, the more sort of feds you have looking into this space, the more dangerous anonymity gets, you know, especially when you get into stuff with, you know, NFTs and you see these stories about wash trades where, you know, it looks like someone's selling an NFT to themselves for a couple thousand Ether, you know, and that sort of thing. Does the scrutiny, do you guys think, does it sort of make anonymity a dangerous thing, something that's going to be less of a key pillar of the crypto world going forward?
Yeah, personally, I think that the blockchain technology on its own can exist independently of whether or not you have a fully anonymous system that's using that distributed ledger technology. You think about what FTX does. Not only is it, you know, non-anonymous, I mean, we don't publish who is doing the trades with each other, right? It's anonymous as the same way that a stock exchange is anonymous in that sense. But we are fully KYCing our users. We need to know exactly that they're not from a sanctioned jurisdiction or they're a sanctioned individual. We need to know enough information about them so that we can do proper tax reporting. So it's almost a complete opposite of anonymity in that sense. And even for cases like a non-custodial wallet address, which doesn't have a name associated with it, there are all these great technological tools like Chainalysis and TRM Labs that help you identify known wallet addresses that maybe they're coming from an exchange, or maybe they're coming from North Korea, and you know to, you know, ban all deposits and withdrawals to and from those addresses. So there's a lot that we know about the network that's participating in blockchain transactions that's fairly non-anonymous. And of course, there's different tools that people have built, different kinds of coins that would enable stuff like that. That's, you know, not necessarily something that we're hugely supportive of, but it's also independent of the question of, you know, where this technology is heading.
And then Mike mentioned NFTs, and I know Bloomberg had a story earlier this week that showed a really small portion of participants tend to reap the greatest gains when it comes to selling NFTs. So I'm wondering, Brett, maybe you can answer this question. Do you think that the NFT market is a manipulated market? And I want to know if you guys participate in these so-called whitelists where these, you know, this tiny portion of participants does tend to reap these benefits.
So what we're seeing is that there's not just a number, a small number of people reaping the benefits. There's a small number of people interacting with the NFT ecosystem, period. And I think that has less to do with, you know, manipulation, let's say. Maybe there is. It's hard to know exactly what's going on in that market. I think what is true is that the barrier to entry for example, NFT marketplaces is pretty high for the existing marketplaces. And that's because, let's say you want to go buy an NFT on OpenSea. What do you have to do? Okay, well, first you have to create a MetaMask wallet, which is something which you have to install a browser extension and create a secret key password. Okay, now you have to open an account, maybe at FTX or Coinbase or something like this, and buy some Ethereum there. Oh, then you have to transfer it out to your MetaMask wallet. And you have to connect your MetaMask wallet to OpenSea. We're already six steps in. And for the average person, you're introducing 20 new concepts, and it's very difficult. And as long as the NFT world remains a very, very much a DeFi product, I think there's going to be a very high barrier to entry for people. And that's why there's so few people interacting with it. That plus the idea of spending $6 million on an image is a little bit hard to swallow, I think, for the average person getting into this business. But it's why we're pretty excited about NFTs in general, because, you know, we do most of the exchange transactions off-chain. It's all bundled with the exchange itself. And we hope that this, to the extent that this is going to be a viable market, let's say for things like blockchain gaming or direct-to-consumer artwork, that it can exist in a way that's just as easy as, you know, buying Bitcoin on FTX.
Well, I got to ask you guys about meme coins. You know, I'm fascinated when, you know, you see something like Shiba Inu do what it did, or Dogecoin do what it did. You know, all of a sudden you're looking at a top 10 cryptocurrency worth tens of billions of dollars. Sam, I can only imagine your Twitter mentions are filled with pictures of Shiba Inus on a daily basis. You know, but walk us through how you guys sort of what your methodology is when you decide whether or not, you know, to allow one of these coins on your exchange. You know, is there sort of a hard and fast rules? Is it a case by case type of thing? How do you decide, all right, let's let the meme coin on?
Yeah, I guess I'll say that there's a lot of factors that go into this, right? One of these is regulatory, understanding the regulatory framework and jurisdiction of it. And this is different in different countries as well. You know, understanding, you know, is this a security? Is there one piece of this? I think another thing is looking at what is the demand for this, right? Is this what our users want? And in the end, you know, we don't try to make investment decisions for our users. Like, we see our users as the ones who are taking charge of their financial future here. And we want to enable that. And then I think one of these is like, is there, you know, fraud risk or something like that from this? You know, I think those tend to be kind of the biggest factors. That at least I think I usually look at on that front.
And I'm guessing your users are skewed more heavily towards the professionals, the institutions, and less towards the retail. Is that a safe bet?
Yeah, certainly relative to the average exchange. I think, you know, we have like three times Coinbase's daily trading volume, and I think they have something like 20 times our user base.
So speaking of your exchange, and Sam, I'm hoping you could maybe enlighten us a little bit more on this, but there have been some reports that your latest funding round values you guys at around $32 billion, which is a really big number. So I wanted to ask you about that and whether or not you could confirm those reports for us, and feel free to break news on the podcast. We would love that. But I also wanted to ask you why so soon you're raising money again following your previous round, which happened just back in October.
So I, you know, don't want to give sort of details of it. You know, I apologize for that. But, you know, I think what I'll say is that we've had a ton of demand to invest in FTX. We sort of continue to have that demand, and we want to find a way to meet that demand. And so I think a lot of this is just driven by, you know, people are asking to invest, and we want to find a way to facilitate that. That's a big piece of this. You know, I think outside of that, like, I think the biggest things we're thinking about are, you know, there's a lot of really powerful uses for capital that we see in the ecosystem that we want to continue to be able to fill here. You know, I think that is sort of everything from, you know, acquisitions, you know, M&A, backstop funds. So I think those are sort of, you know, those together are most of what we're looking at, I guess, from that perspective.
Yeah, I think in general, like if you look at FTX and its growth and how long or rather not long it's been around as a company, the whole timeline is crunched into what we see as a good pace, but for the rest of the, you know, capital markets feels like warp speed. And I think that's just, you know, well, why wait? There's clearly demand. There's clearly ways for us to deploy that capital quickly and use that to grow and continue to leverage what we see as our technological platform for all the adjacent areas that we can hook up into. And, you know, why not continue to raise or to think about raising, you know, where we can?
Yeah, makes sense. I got to admit, I've been going easy on you guys. Valdana will tell you, I usually ask like 11-part questions.
He really does.
I'm going to get a 2-part question in at least. What's next for FTX? You know, what are sort of the ambitions? Is it capturing more market share? Are there sort of other, you know, lanes of the crypto industry you can get into? And the second part is, when you buy a Super Bowl ad, do you at least get a free ticket to the game?
I'll say on the second one, I don't think we got a free ticket to the game with that. Although I do think we may be able to scrounge some tickets up one way or another here.
We know a few football players in our network. I'm not really sure if we can name them, but there's a couple of people that we're adjacent to there.
You need Brady to have a good playoffs, I guess, to get the good seats.
One can dream.
But talk about those ambitions. You know, how do you grow the company from here? I mean, obviously, as Valdana said, a torrid pace of growth. I mean, you know, one can only assume you got to sort of take a deep breath and expect the growth to slow. But what are the ambitions going forward?
We have so many different ones, but, you know, I can start with a couple and, you know, Sam can take a couple. But our most exciting area for growth right now has to do with derivatives. As you guys know, most of the world's crypto volume trades in derivatives. And the reason that FTX International became one of the largest, if not the largest crypto platforms in the world, has been through its superior technology and risk engine as a derivatives platform. And up to now, we haven't been able to bring those products to US customers because we didn't have the licenses. But now that we've finished acquiring Ledger X and we rebranded them to FTX US Derivatives, we now have the exchange and clearinghouse licenses to be able to offer these products. And our number one priority right now is working with the CFTC on approval to be able to bring margin derivatives, futures and options on crypto to start, although that's not the only place that you know, we can go in terms of offering derivatives to US customers directly in a disintermediated model. So that's by far our biggest opportunity for growth, I think, in the company.
I completely agree with that. And I think that's the single biggest thing that we're looking at here. You know, what else are we looking at? I think, you know, we're looking at growing out our consumer platform. I think, you know, we see extremely high upside on that front. And while we haven't necessarily, you know, I don't think that is anything close to a sort of finished product, but I think it's an extremely exciting one. And I think we have a lot to grow on that front too. So I think that's probably the second thing that we're thinking the most about right now.
But you both skipped the most important question, which is when you guys are going to go public.
Crickets, Valdana, crickets.
It's something we're thinking about. We don't know whether or not we will, and if so, when. We might. We want to be ready to do it because we think that there is certainly upside in doing so. It's a big production. We're fortunate to be in a position where we don't have to, you know, where we're profitable as is, and we're able to raise in, you know, private markets as well. So, you know, I think the honest answer there is, you know, we're thinking about it, and we'll see. But I don't know that answer, so I can't give you an answer to it.
We're here for you when you're ready to answer that one, Sam. We're willing to take. We're willing to have you back to break that news. But I want to talk about, obviously, the big buzzword this year was decentralized finance, DeFi, decentralized autonomous organizations. How does an exchange like FTX fit into that universe? Is it more of a risk or more of an opportunity, a little of both? You know, how do you guys fit into that whole world?
I mean, I think it's an opportunity. I think that like we're excited to facilitate, you know, the cryptocurrency ecosystem in general. And I think that, you know, what I see in a median case is sort of a world where, you know, you have a bunch of centralized platforms with sort of decentralized networks connecting them. And so it's not sort of necessarily an either or from that perspective. You know, we're pretty excited to continue working with a lot of the, you know, platforms in the space on that. I think that there's always going to be things that make more sense on one side or on the other.
Yeah, if you think of the growth of Solana as a network, FTX has played a huge role there, not least the fact that FTX has been the main on-ramp into the Solana DeFi ecosystem. If you want to participate in an application that is using the Solana protocol, well, probably your first step is to open an account with FTX or FTX US and buy some Sol and use that to transfer it to, let's say, an external wallet where you're going to use it to participate in some application or protocol or, you know, staking pool or whatever it is that you want to do. And so we've always grown alongside them. And as Sam said, I think that the centralized exchanges are going to be the licensed gatekeepers. You know, at some point, regulation is going to come to DeFi as well. And it's going to be, well, this thing can exist. We need to make sure that the right people are interacting with those platforms. Well, which platforms are currently set up to be able to KYC millions of users to make sure that they are the right people to interact with them? Well, decentralized exchanges like FTX. And we're also the fiat on-ramps and off-ramps. If at the end of the day, you've made some profit on some protocol and you want to take that and actually convert it to fiat currency, well, the only real way to do that is through the centralized exchanges. So again, we're going to be these licensed gatekeepers that grow up alongside the protocols.
And Brett, maybe you can answer this question as well, but I've been doing some reporting on DAOs, and somebody I spoke with said to me, you know, not everything needs to be tokenized, which I thought was a really good point. We're seeing that just more and more and more. So I'm wondering what you might make of a statement like that.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the use of blockchain in general, not just tokenization, needs to be the correct fit for the purpose. You know, what is blockchain really? It's sort of a slow, kind of bad database, but with some really, really great features to it. And if you're only using it as a database, or you're only using a token as to get around the fact that it's something less exciting than it is, then it's not really that interesting. I think that even the word DAO, I think a lot of people are using the DAO term just to mean a group of people, as opposed to a truly decentralized entity with a real, like a governance token and some kind of blockchain-based voting system. So it's a lot of buzzwords are being thrown around a lot, but I think the concept of tokenization is really powerful. I think the idea in the future of tokenizing stocks in the US, for example, the way that Sam has been able to do on FTX International is really powerful and interesting. And there's a lot of great benefits of tokenization, like full transparency on the blockchain, instant settlement, 24/7 availability. And these are the kinds of things that we should take away from tokenization.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
All right, guys, I can't let you go without getting into some good old-fashioned FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. One of my favorite pieces of FUD, I got to say, and Sam, I know you mentioned, you talked a little bit about the sort of the potential of quantum computing as computing just gets more and more powerful going forward. But one really interesting piece of FUD that landed in my inbox was someone making the case that, well, quantum computing is actually a risk to crypto if computers get so powerful that they're able to sort of break the cryptography. Is that a valid concern to anyone, or, you know, am I just reading the wrong emails here?
I guess I'll just say briefly, like, I think some cryptographic protocols are in theory potentially vulnerable to it, although it depends on, like, in practice is very different from in theory, but it could also help breed new ones that might be even more powerful. So I think it's, like, certainly something to pay attention to, although I don't think it's going to, like, kill the broader industry or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, not to introduce more FUD to the equation here, but...
Oh, we're fans of FUD here.
More FUD's good. So blockchain technology is built off of commonly known and commonly used cryptographic algorithms, in particular, the ones that power all encryption of messages that are sent between different parties. So I think if you're going to be concerned about encryption breaking as a result of quantum computing, I think before you worry about Bitcoin not really working anymore, we need to worry about governments not being able to send messages to each other in private. I think that's like a lot bigger of a concern than, oh no, Bitcoin is not working as well anymore.
That's a great point.
So I do agree that if we're going to start to approach that level of technology and application for quantum computing, I think way before that, we just need to work in general on alternatives to current modern encryption methods.
Yeah. That is some high quality FUD there. I got to say, Valdona.
I have a sort of related question, and it's actually a markets related question. And I didn't want to let you guys go without us bringing it up. And I'm actually shocked it hasn't come up yet, which was last weekend's crypto crash, which every single person I talked to this week, equity market strategists, everybody just kept bringing up crypto and the crash that we saw. So, Sam, I'm hoping you can tell me, you know, something that comes up a lot is it's leverage that was sort of exacerbating what was happening last weekend. So how levered really is this market? And then I was hearing rumors that it was one whale out there who was doing a lot of the selling last weekend. So can you, who's the whale? And can you confirm that that's true?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know who is doing it. I can say that I think there's like not as much leverage as there once was in crypto. I think that, you know, circa 2020, I think it was fairly leveraged. Over the last year, we've seen a lot more capital enter this space, which has sort of filled out a liquidity base. And, you know, FTX tends to have relatively low leverage as far as these things go. But, you know, I think our average leverage is like 2x or something like that. So not zero, but not extremely high either.
Yeah, I got to say, if I knew how to write an algorithm, I'd write one that buys Bitcoin like every Saturday morning around 8 a.m. and sells it on Friday afternoons. Throwing it out there to anyone out there who's listening, you know.
You could backtest that pretty quickly, actually. I don't know. You might have something there.
I also want a meme coin named after Golden Doodles. You know, I don't have a Shiba, you know, I want a Golden Doodle coin. I think that one would do well. But
we're missing cat coins, too.
Yeah, I have a Persian kitty. I'd love a coin for her.
You need some. There's no cat coins. Well, yeah, I don't know.
You know what they say? Be the change you want to see in the world.
Tighten up your straitjackets. It's time for the craziest things we saw in markets this week.
Well, Donna, you kick us off. What's the craziest thing you saw this week in markets?
Well, I've touched on like weird food products that companies are sort of trying to put out there to attract attention or something in the past. I think you and I once talked about the Cheetos flavored Mountain Dew, I think it was, which I have yet to try. But this week I saw that there's now an Oreo flavored or Oreo adjacent wine brand that's coming out. So there's a bottle of red wine and there's actual pictures of Oreos on it. And I guess it doesn't have any Oreo cookies crushed inside it, but it's supposed to have like a chocolatey flavor. And it just, honestly, I don't know what to make of it.
This is what happens when you legalize weed, I think. This is the products that you get as a result. That's my take on things. I don't know how that has to do with markets, Valdona, but I'll allow it.
It's so, because it's these companies trying to... is it like for Mountain Dew, it's PepsiCo.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
They're trying to monetize on these like weird flavors, I think. I don't know. It's weird to me. It's weird to me. So it counts.
I'll give you our loyal listener, Twiggy Sunday, wrote in with a pretty good one too. This is not at all markets related, but it's so crazy that it's worth bringing up. In Saudi Arabia, they every year hold a beauty contest for camels. Let me repeat that, Valdana, a beauty contest for camels. And there's a big scandal. And this is high stakes. There's like $66 million in prizes. Big scandal this year. 40 camels were disqualified because they had been injected with Botox and had other cosmetic procedures performed on them. So
you must be making this
up. Oh, no. That's courtesy of CBS News via Twiggy Sunday. True story.
Oh, my gosh. Who wins the $66 million? The camels?
Miss Camel, I guess. Miss Camel universe, the British, you know, the most beautiful camel. I don't know if you can figure out a markets angle, but
it's money related.
I'll allow it.
That's really good.
Because
Twiggy.
It's heavy on crazy, light on markets. How about you guys? You got anything for us for the craziest things you've seen over at FTX this week?
Well, I don't think I'm going to be able to beat either of those two things. And I also need to call PETA right after the podcast. What's crazy that I saw this week was SushiSwap. I don't know if you guys have been following the drama on Twitter, but you know, there's all this drama around the chief technology officer, one of the main developers of Sushi, made a very big public display of his unhappiness with working for Sushi and then decided to leave. And you know, the token is probably suffering as a result. And I think it goes to show how much, you know, companies and projects really depend on the software developers. And think about FTX. We have only, you know, a small handful of software developers, you know, something like 12 compared to maybe the thousands that might exist at other companies, you know. And we are awesome because we can go super nimble and quick with a very few number of software developers. At the same time, to think about a company so dependent on one such that they can get out there and really tank the whole project is pretty terrifying in a lot of ways.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to give you mine now. I don't know if you have one, Sam, but I'll let you think about it. I'll give you mine. Mine actually came from the hearing you were at. Our reporter here at Bloomberg, Crystal Kim, wrote a story about a few crazy things about there. I'm not going to get into the big baseball analogy, which I thought was a good one. But Democratic Rep. Brad Sherman of California became an inspiration for cryptocurrency token creators after he disparaged the coin eat coin world of digital assets. And I think he was telling a story. I think it was this children's book. There was an old woman who swallowed a fly. I don't know why she swallowed a fly. And then, you know, she swallowed I think it was a frog to eat the fly, and then a bigger animal to eat the frog. And his point was, he went on to say that Bitcoin could be unseated by Ether, which could be replaced by Doge, to only be replaced by Hamster Coin, and then Cobra Coin, and then would Mongoose Coin come and eat Cobra Coin? So needless to say, the people watching the show instantly went out and created Mongoose Coin and Goose Coin. There's a Mong Coin, all sorts of cryptocurrencies inspired by this this hearing yesterday. So, Brett, I don't know if you guys will be trading Mongoose Coin soon, but who knows?
It was quite a line of questioning. I respect the skepticism, though. I think, you know, thinking about what is the utility of some of the crypto assets is a reasonable thing to do, and so I think it's important for us to answer and think about as an industry. But yeah, it wasn't without its colorful moments that found its way onto the crypto Twitter, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. Where they truly belong. Well, I think all those convoluted questions helped you guys prepare for my ridiculous questions. So it was good training for that. And with that, Sam, I don't know. Brett had a pretty good crazy thing. I don't know if you can top him.
Yeah, you know, I mean, honestly, it's the craziest thing I think for me was just how not crazy the hearing was. I think it was just massively above my expectations in terms of being, you know, in terms of being, I think, like, constructive. And I think sometimes, in this environment, not crazy is the new crazy.
Yeah, I agree. I was saying before you got on, you know, you guys, those hearings can get pretty ugly fast. And I think the sort of mutual respect and dialogue was pretty interesting. It's kind of what you want out of that type of hearing, rather than people just trying to get a good soundbite or, you know, viral video clip, which is sometimes what it seems like is going on. So truly crazy that the hearing didn't go off the rails. I agree. With that, guys, I think that might be all the time we have. Valdana, what do you think? Should we let these guys off the hook?
Yeah, I think we should let them go. But they gave us so much of their time. So thank you both so much.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
What Goes Up will be back next week. Until then, you can find us on the Bloomberg Terminal website and app, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love it if you took the time to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts so more listeners can find us. And you can find us on Twitter. Follow me at Reganonymous. Valdana Hyryk is at Valdana Hyryk. You can also follow Bloomberg Podcasts at Podcasts. And thank you to Charlie Pellett of Bloomberg Radio. What Goes Up is produced by Laura Carlson. The head of Bloomberg Podcasts is Francesca Levy. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Join us in Chicago or virtually on May 2nd for Bloomberg's Business Value of AI event and networking reception. This event will gather business and technology executives to share their experiences and provide insights into their strategies for deploying AI that achieves a desirable ROI. You'll also learn how companies have successfully implemented AI solutions that have improved productivity and profitability. This program is proudly sponsored by IBM. Register at BloombergLive.com/AI/radio.